tonight's shiur is on Parshas Matos Masse, which is this week's coming Parsha. It's a double Parsha, very long. And the title of the shiur is Committing a Sin in Eretz Yisrael. So as the title indicates, the main question of the shiur, what we're going to focus the shiur on is it worse to commit a sin in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to, let's say, in Chutz La'aretz in America? And if it is worse, why would it be worse? And if not, why is it not worse? Why is it the same? So that's really the focus of the shiur tonight, the main question of the shiur. And we're going to get a little bit of background information. And the main source for the shiur tonight is going to be one Ramban. And there's three points that I want to bring out in the Ramban, which discuss this concept, the concept of Klal Yisrael as a whole, sinning in Eretz Yisrael, and what the damage is, as opposed to Klal Yisrael sinning in Chutz La'aretz. Okay, so I'm going to start us off in the Parsha and read source number one on the sheets, if you're following along, which I know you all are. It's Bamidbar Perek Lamed He, starts with Pasuk Lamed, and I'm going to explain what the Pasukim mean first, and then we'll get into it, the heart of the matter. It says, Kol makei nefesh lefi edim yirtzach es harutzeach ve'ira chad lo yaneh b'nefesh lamos. So you have a murder, you have a situation of a murder, and how do we prosecute the murderer? We need the testimony of two people, and if we have the testimony of only one witness, then the murderer doesn't die. He doesn't get the death penalty. Only through two witnesses or more does the murderer get the death penalty. I think we're all familiar with this concept in the Torah. So if we look at Lamed Aleph, v'lo sikhu kofer lenefesh rotzeach asher hu rasha lamos ki mos yumos. Now there's an extra pasuk, and it tells us that you're not allowed to take a bribe from the murderer in order to get him off the death penalty. So let's say you have a rich murderer, and he says, I'll give you $1 million to avoid the death penalty. The Torah is saying specifically, no, you can't take the bribe. And there's a specific isser, or there's a prohibition in the Torah of taking bribes in that situation. And then the Torah goes on, v'lo sikhu kofer lanus el ir miklato lashuv lasheves ba'aretz ad mosa kohen. And then you have another situation of murder, when you have a murderer who murders b'shogig, which we're going to call by accident. It's a little bit more complicated, but we're calling it by accident. So in that case, the murderer doesn't get killed, but his onus is that he has to go to the ir miklat, the city of refuge, and he has to stay there until the kohen gadol dies. Let's say that guy wants to get out of his sentence, and he wants to pay himself out and bribe somebody to get out. So Beis Din doesn't take the bribe. It's usher to take the bribe. So in both situations, a situation where a person's a cold-hearted killer, or they're a killer b'shogeg, in both situations, the Torah is telling us that you're not allowed to take a bribe from that person in order to get them off the death penalty or gullus, or going to the ir miklat. Okay? This is a little bit of background information, and we're going to see why it's relevant. But the main idea is that...
Are there situations where it is okay to take a bribe?
We're going to discuss that. It's not really a bribe. There are situations where money suffices. For example, in a damage situation, a situation of damage, where you... Let's say you cause somebody's arm to be cut off somehow. So there, in that situation, their money is given. But when there's a situation of murder, we don't accept money. So we're going to explain how that, you know, why that is or how that fits in. But it's a good question, Tamar. But the main psukim that we're going to focus on, you need that background information of this isser of a kofar, of taking a bribe. But now we're going to get to these two strange psukim. They're very odd. They're very vague, and the Ramban's going to explain them. If you look at Lamed Gimel in source number one, it says, V'lo sacha nifu esa aret asher atem ba. So do not, and I'm going to interpret the word sachanifu based on Rashi and Unklis, do not make the land guilty in which the blood in which you are, ki adam hu yachanif es haaretz, because the blood, the spilt blood, it causes the land to be guilty. Vila aretz lo yichupar ladam asher shupach ba, and the land does not get atonement for the blood that is spilt in the land, ki im bedam shofcho, unless you kill the murderer. Okay, it's a strange, very strange pasuk. And then it goes on, V'lo sitamei es haaretz asher atem yoshvim ba, and lamed daled, do not make the land impure, be make it tamei, in which that which you live in, asher ani shochein besocha, because Hashem's shechina is there, ki ani Hashem shochein besoch b'nei Yisrael, for I am Hashem, he who dwells amongst Klal Yisrael. So the Torah in these last two psukim, they're telling you that you can't make the land guilty, lo sacha nifu es aretz, by allowing murder and not prosecuting the murderer. And the other idea is that you can't make the land tameh. Why can't you make the land tameh? Because Hashem is shochein in the land. He dwells in the land. So we have these two isurim that the Torah is bringing to light. Some one idea is defiling the land or making it guilty, and the other one's making the land impure. So the obvious question, I think, that emerges is what do these things have to do with the land? You know, it's one thing to say that a person, let's say, shouldn't, it's usher to murder, and it's usher to take a bribe for murder. But what is murder, or if the psukim are referring to murder, what does it have to do with the land itself, the Eretz Yisrael? And what is this Isser? Why does the Torah have to specify these two Isserim? Lo sacha nifu es aretz, velo satame es aretz. What's another question? Somebody asked the other question, obvious question in these two psukim. They're just pshat questions.
Well, I didn't understand why if you tame the land, it would like affect Hashem.
Okay, good.
That's what
it seems
to be saying in the last part.
Okay, so on Pasuk Lamed, you're asking, you know, what does it mean that if you make the land... How about we understand, what does it mean to make the land tame, right? That's a more basic question. But then also, by making the land tame, what does that have to do with God's Shekhinah being there? What's the connection between the two? And furthermore, I mean, I think the most basic question is, what's the difference between lo sacha nifu and lo satame? You know, what is the difference exactly? How can we explain the difference between making the land guilty, as Rashi and Unkelus interpret it, and making the land impure, lo satame? There should only be one idea or one iser. Don't, I guess, make the land bad. Do bad to the land. But what exactly is the difference in these two psukim? Okay, but the psukim are very vague, and they're just not such clear psukim. So we're going to look to the Ramban, who's one of the Rishonim, who goes into depth in explaining this pasuk, and hopefully we'll gain insight into the value of Eretz Yisrael in the meantime. You know, that's one of the focuses of the shir. If we look at number two in the Ramban on Pasuk Lamed, Parak Lamed, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Velo Sacha Nifu Es Aretz, he tries to explain the meaning of these psukim. Okay, so Debbie is going to read number two. Debbie?
Okay.
Mipnei
Shamar Tchila. Tchila. Vehayu ele lachem lechukak mishpat v'dor techem v'cho moshvot techem.
Yeah.
I keep reading?
Yeah, keep reading. I'll tell you when to stop.
She'ilu ha-mishpatim nohagim gam v'chutza la'aretz chazar v'achmir v'yoshvei ha'aretz yoter l'chvod ha-shchina asher sham.
Okay, good. So what is he referring to? There's a pasuk chaf tes, right before our piece. It says, if you look at number three, and Rashi and the Ramban, they both explain what's the purpose of this pasuk. It's trying to tell you that even in Chutz La'aretz, we have a court system, and the Torah and the laws of the Torah are obtained in Chutz La'aretz, obviously if the Jews are capable, and if they have sovereignty. Let's say in America, the laws of the Torah are upheld there, and you can even have a Sanhedrin in Chutz La'aretz as long as there's a Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban starts off by mentioning that even though there's both a Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz, and the laws are maintained in both, the Torah is coming here to tell you that we're more machmir, we're more strict on those who live in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because of the kavod of the Shekhinah Asher Sham. Because of the respect for the Shekhinah that is there, that is in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, go on, Debbie. Okay, so good. It sounds like he's saying that if you do something wrong in Eretz Yisrael, there is a greater, it's worse. The Torah is more machmer. He's going to explain what that means, so keep going on.
Okay. He's here, shelo nachnif ota, v'shelo nitma ota.
Okay, so the Torah, it's coming to warn us, it's giving us an azhara, to warn us against A, being nachnif osa, which he's going to explain, and also being making it tameh, making the land of Eretz Yisrael tameh. So now he's going to explain, what does it mean, velo sacha nifu, what does that mean to make it chanuf? Go on.
Inyan hachnifah hu, ha-ne'emar v'kralot.
Okay, so the idea of chanufa, which is the word used in the pasuk, is mentioned by the klalos, the curses to Klal Yisrael. Go on.
Zera rov tozi hasadeh v'me'at tasof.
Okay, so you'll plant a lot and you'll only gather a little. That's one of the curses. Go on. Kramim titov v'avata v'yayin lo sishteh. So you'll plant a lot of vineyards, but you won't have any wine to drink. Go on. You'll have a lot of olives, but you won't have any oil come out of those olives. Go on. So all the trees and all your fruit, you'll have a lot of it, but then it'll be eaten up by the locusts. Okay, go on. So the idea of chanufa, when it says v'losa chanifu asaretz, do not make the land chanuf, is when the land or something appears different than what it actually is. So, for example, it appears if you put in a lot of seed, it appears that you'll get a lot of produce, but the opposite occurs. So that's what he says chanufa is. It's asot hefech. It's doing the opposite, hanira v'hanidma le'inayim, that which appears and seems plausible to the eyes. Okay, go on.
Vehu onesh ba'eretz.
Yeah.
So what that stands for.
Ba'avodah zarah.
Okay, ba'avodah zarah. U'bashlichot damim. U'begilui arayot.
Okay, so this onesh occurs in the land, meaning the land doesn't produce that which you think it's going to produce for three sins as a result. Avodah zarah, Shvichos Damem, and Gila Arayos. What are those three, Debbie?
What's worshiping idols.
Good.
Shvichos Damem, is it like killing someone?
Killing someone, good.
Killing someone's blood. I forgot how to translate that.
It means like, I guess, lewdness there. What is that? Lewdness. Improper relationships.
Okay.
Tamar's yelling in the background. Improper relationships. Okay. Commotion Amar. Like,
I forgot to unmute.
I heard you from... All right, I heard you. Commotion Amar, go on.
Commotion Amar. Hello, Chanaf. Sechanef Haaretz.
Yeah.
Chanafa Tachat Yoshvea. Letach Nifei Haaretz.
Biznu Secha. Okay, so they're quoting three psukim, I think, as a reference to the three different sins that cause the land to do this. Okay, so just an overview of the Ramban. What's the Ramban saying? He's saying that there's a separate iser of velosachanifu, of doing this to the land. What are you doing to the land? What you're doing to the land is that you're making it that if you plant a lot of seeds, it won't produce anything. Or if you have a lot of olives produced, you won't get any shemen out of it. And he gives various examples. And he says that this happens when you do three sins. Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Damim, and Gila Araya. So when you do these three sins in Eretz Yisrael, it produces this effect in the land. That you have a lot of seed, but you don't get any produce. That you have a lot of olives, and you don't get any oil. Okay? So that's what the Ramban's saying. And he's saying that that's what the Torah is telling you. Lo sachanifu, don't do that to the land. Okay? So what are the questions on this Ramban? Do you have any questions? I'm not going to ask them. I'm going to let you guys ask the questions. Is this Ramban clear to everybody?
Well, I guess the question would be, what's the relationship between those three things?
Okay, so one question is, what is it about these three things what is unique about these three things? And B, you know, why does it produce this effect in the land? You know, what is... what is Tamar's question based on? I think her question's based on a premise that whenever you have an onesh in the Torah, a punishment, it usually fits the crime. There's like a midah k'neged midah aspect of every onesh in the Torah. So I think Tamar's question is like, what's the relationship between these sins? You go ahead, speak.
I was just going to say that in all those three sins that were mentioned here, the people involved in it have a certain fantasy or a certain expectation of what they plan that will happen.
Good.
And in general, when you have that expectation or fantasy, it doesn't work out in the long run. So it's the punishment would fit the crime, because when you're planting or when you see something in front of you in the land, you expect that if you have a vineyard that you're going to reap the profits of it, and that's not what happened.
All right. Debbie Schwartz, the star of this year. I like Debbie Schwartz's idea for the Ramban. What she's saying is that the reason why there's a relationship between, according to the Ramban, between these three in specific and this result in the land, I think, is that she's saying that by Avodah Zarah and Shvichas Damim and Gila Arayos, there's an expectation when you are involved in these sins that they'll turn out a certain way. But what ends up happening when you're engaged in these sins is that they don't end up satisfying whatever you wanted to get out of them. So the land reflects that. The onus in the land reflects that. It's the same idea that you have an expectation when you plant in the land that it'll produce a lot of produce, and the onus is that it doesn't satisfy that, and it doesn't fit the expectation that you had. So I think it's parallel to these three sins. These three sins are particularly alluring sins: murder, Avodah Zarah, and Gila Arayos. And there is a certain expectation that you have when you get engaged in these sins that they'll provide you with a certain pleasure, or a certain, you'll get a certain, let's say, by Avodah Zarah, a certain religious satisfaction out of it. But the idea is that when you do it in the land, the onus of the land, which is a midah keneged midah, it demonstrates the futility of the involvement in these sins. That just like these sins, your expectation was that they would produce a certain effect in you, they would give you a certain pleasure, certain happiness, religious satisfaction. But so too in the land, your expectation is that the land will produce a lot by planting a lot, and it doesn't happen. The opposite occurs, and you don't get anything out of it. Okay? So I think that explains the relationship between the onesh and these sins. But still, the overall question in the Ramban is, why is there a special... What does this have to do with the land? And why is there a special iser over here by Eretz Yisrael as opposed to, like, Chutz La'aretz? And what is the nature of the iser? Like, it says in the Torah, V'lo sachanifu es ha'aretz, don't do this to the land. Don't make it that the land doesn't produce... don't make it that the land, when you plant a lot, it won't produce anything. Don't make it that in the land, if you have a lot of olives, you won't get a lot of shemen. Why not? What's the problem with that? You know, what exactly is the issue with, or is the iser, the nature of this iser? Okay, but what is that? But what's the problem in the land? It says, Lo sachanifu. It doesn't say, don't do murder, don't do Avodah Zarah, don't do Shvichas Damim in the land, in Eretz Yisrael. It says, don't produce this effect in the land. Lo sachanifu es ha'aretz. Don't make the land chanufa. Why not? What's the problem with that?
Because that's going to change the effects of everyone around you also. Okay. Meaning, your people are engrossed in their land all the time.
Okay, that's good.
So it's going to have a direct effect on how everyone's treating each other. If one person, you know, involved in...
But the iser,
if one person murders someone else, it's going to affect someone else, and everyone's intertwined here, so it's going to affect how everyone works together, in a sense, in this land.
Okay, but is it... I think it's the land itself. I don't think it's talking... It's talking about the aretz, the lo sachanifu es ha'aretz, not... It's the actual land, and you're producing a certain effect in the physical land, in the substance of the land, that the land was supposed to produce a lot of fruit, and instead it produces very little. So the Torah is saying, don't do that. Don't create that effect in the land, and by doing Shvichas Damim and Avodah Zarah, you will create that effect. But what exactly is the... Why is there a separate issur, and what is the problem of Lo Sachanifu? So Nicole wants to say it's a problem in terms of the effect that it'll have on other people in the land. But I think the Torah is focusing directly on the land itself. I think we just have to answer a more basic question. What is the purpose of the land, of Eretz Yisrael? The most basic purpose of the land.
To sustain people.
To sustain the people, okay. But
that they can live, that they can eat.
Every land is supposed to sustain people, I hope. America is supposed to sustain Americans. So what is different about Eretz Yisrael? What's unique about Eretz Yisrael in terms of...
Home for the Jews.
What?
It's for the Jews.
It's for the Jews. And what?
Specifically and for the Jewish people, I guess.
In what sense is it for the Jews? Like, what do you mean it's for the Jews? So now, the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael, so Eretz Yisrael is just... Is there any difference between Eretz Yisrael and, let's say, like, Uganda? You know, let's say the Jews by... we all know that the Jews ended up getting Israel. what exactly is different?
They do have a lot of history there.
Okay, there's a lot of history. What else makes Eretz Yisrael unique? I agree with that. That's one point. There's a lot of history there. All the stories of Tanakh and the Torah took place in Eretz Yisrael. You know, what else is unique about Eretz Yisrael that you don't have in let's say Chutz La'aretz, about the land itself? All right, you have all these mitzvos of the land, right? You have, let's say, like Truma and Maisros, and you have Shemitah and Yovel. You don't have all that stuff in Chutz La'aretz. You only have that in Eretz Yisrael. So the land itself is tied to mitzvos and ideas and concepts. So those are some ideas in the land that make Eretz Yisrael unique. But what is the whole purpose of Eretz Yisrael? And we're going to get into this in the Ramban. So I think the whole purpose, and I think it'll explain also what this Isser is, why this Isser exists in the Torah. I think the purpose of Eretz Yisrael is that it's a land that leads a person to Yedias Hashem and to Kvod Hashchina, as the Ramban says, right? And the way the land does that is, you know, through the ideas of the land and through the fact that it produces and it sustains Klal Yisrael. So these things, they're supposed to lead Klal Yisrael to a greater respect and a greater knowledge of Hashem. And as we said in the previous Yurim, the idea of Shechina is that, and it's important to clarify this idea, the idea of the Shechina being present isn't that there's a substance in Eretz Yisrael of God, because that we don't hold of. But the idea of Shechina in general is that when a person is in a situation where they can gain or glean greater knowledge and greater appreciation of Hashem, that's what we mean by when we say the Shechina is there. It means that there's a greater manifestation of God. It's more obvious to man that God is there, and it's easier for man to obtain knowledge and greater appreciation. So the idea is that that exists in Eretz Yisrael, and the land itself, it lends itself to that because of all the mitzvos and the history of Klal Yisrael there. So I think what the Ramban is saying, and let's just do that inside in the Ramban, in number 5. So I'm going to read it inside. He pretty much says that. He says, V'hinei Hashem, this is on Vayikra Perek Yidches, Pasuk Chaf Hei, and it's a similar type of Pasuk as our Pasuk. And the Ramban explains, V'hinei Hashem HaNichbad Hu Elokei HaElokim Va'adonei HaAdonim L'chol HaOlam. So Hashem is the God of the whole world. Aval Eretz Yisrael Emtzaos HaYishuv, Eretz Yisrael, which is in the middle of the world, Chi Nachalas Hashem Miyuchades Lishmo. It's called the Nachala, the land of Hashem, which is dedicated to His name, to the oneness of His name, and it's designated to that. Lo Nasan Alea Min HaMalachim Katzin Shoter Moshel Bahanchilo Osa La'amo HaMiyuchad Shmo Zera O'avav. He didn't appoint any subsidiary, any other malach to run the land, but rather it's governed by direct Hashgacha, because it was given to His nation, which is in charge of unifying His name, you know, showing the unity of God, the Zera O'avav, the Zera, the offspring of His beloved, meaning the Avos. V'zesha Amar v'yisem li segula mikol ha'amim ki li kol ha'aretz. There'll be a treasure for me amongst all the nations, because this land is mine. Uchsiv v'yisem li le'am v'anuchi eyelachem le'elokim lo shetiyu atem El Elokim Achirim Klal. There's no other deity, meaning there's no other malach or any, it doesn't mean literally God, but there's no malach, there's no other ruler over this land other than God Himself. The land of Eretz Yisrael is governed by direct Hashgacha from God. V'inik Kiddush Ha'am Ha'yoshev Ba'artso B'kiddushas Ha'arayos V'rove Ha'mitzvos Liosom Lishmo. So the people that live in the land, meaning Klal Yisrael, they have a certain holiness, and they're dedicated to keeping the mitzvos and the kedusha, the holiness of keeping the prohibitions of Arayas. Ulechach Omar Ushmartem es kol chukosai ves kol mishpatai v'asisem osom v'lo saki eschem ha'aretz. That you should keep and guard all the mitzvos and all the chukim and the mishpatim, and that way the land won't spit you out. Uchsiv v'amar lachem atem tirshu es admasam ani etznena lachem l'reshes osa ani Hashem elokeichem asher yivdalti eschem min ha'amim. And you will inherit the land, and Hashem will separate you.
Yomar, meaning to say, Ki hivdil osanu mikola amem asher nasan aleim sarim velohim acherim. All the other nations have other forces that govern them. Besito lanu esa aretz yehu yisbarach lanu leelokim b'niem yuchadim l'shmo. But Hashem gave us the land, and He's the only one who governs the land because it's, He says it should be miyuchad l'shmo. It should be designated for Hashem's name. V'hinei aretz shi nachalas Hashem hanichbad taki kol metameyosa v'losispol ovdei avodazara umaglim arayos. The land, which is dedicated to God and God's greatness, it doesn't tolerate ovdei avodazara and people who prohibit arayos, and it spits them out. It spits everybody out. So what do you see? You see that the land is designed to lead to or to sustain a moral community. And the land itself, it doesn't tolerate immorality. And that's what the Pesukim say over there. It says the land spits out people who are immoral. So there's a design in the land that the land itself is supposed to lead a person. It's supposed to help a person gain Yedias Hashem and gain a certain respect of the Shekhinah. Okay, so that's the very design of the land. So what is the Ramban saying? What's the Isser of Losach Hanifu? If we understand that the design of a land is that it's supposed to lead us to a glory of God and it's supposed to sustain a moral people. So what's the Isser? The Isser is that, see, when you produce in the land, when you produce a situation where the land's not sustaining, so that in turn also limits the land's ability to bring people to God's kavod, to kavod Ashkina. So what's the Ramban saying again? The Ramban's saying that there's a separate Isser of doing Avodah Zarah, Shvichos Damim, and Gil Arayas in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because when you do that, you produce a punishment in the land that the land doesn't produce. If the land's not producing, it can't function in line with its design to bring Klal Yisrael to Kvod Hashchina. Because when you're in a situation where there's a drought in the land that you're living in, you're not gonna be in a state where you're just gonna say, "Wow, this land's really bringing me to a great respect for God." No, you'll only do that if you feel like you're being sustained and the land's producing a lot. Like right now in America, there's a tremendous drought. I don't know if you all know about this, but there's a tremendous drought. It's the greatest drought in 24 years. And apparently they say that if it keeps going on, prices in the supermarket are going to go up. Now, if prices in the supermarket go up, you're not going to be too happy about it. And you're not exactly going to reflect on the situation and say, "Wow, this is a great situation." You're going to be upset about it. It's going to affect your ability to use that in Eretz Yisrael, to use that situation to understand and give Kvod Hashchina. So the Ramban's saying that there's a separate Isser, there's a separate harm in doing Gilui Arayos and Shvichos Damim and Avodah Zarah and Eretz Yisrael, in that you permanently destroy or affect the land's ability to bring Klal Yisrael to a greater appreciation of God and a greater appreciation of the Shekhinah. So that's one idea in the Ramban. Lo sachanifu asaret. So it is worse to do sins in Eretz Yisrael. Why is it worse? Because then you have this punishment in the land that the land's not sustaining and it doesn't produce. Now, what's the problem with that? What's the flaw in that? It doesn't let itself, or doesn't lend itself, to gaining greater Yedias Hashem. You're taking away Eretz Yisrael from its natural design. It's designed to lead you to greater knowledge of God. And these things take the land's ability to do that, take it away. Okay, is that idea clear, or does anybody have any questions, or was everybody following that? Should I repeat it? Well, the land is designed. No, the land is unique. Eretz Yisrael is unique in that it's designed to lead a person to greater Yedias Hashem, and we'll see that idea is clear from the fact that you have all these mitzvos. You have Shemitah, you have Yovel. All these mitzvos are there to lead you to a greater appreciation of Hashem. So, of course, if the land isn't producing fruit, you're not going to exactly relate to the land in a positive way. You're not going to say, "Wow, this land is great. I really get an appreciation of God from this land." No, it's the opposite. It's going to deter you from getting greater Kvod Hashchina and greater appreciation of God from the land. So the Torah is telling you that that's the problem. It's not just the Isser itself, the prohibition of itself, but it's also that you're harming the land. You're lo sachanifu asaret. Don't create this effect in the land, because the land won't be able to have its, or be in line with its design. Okay? Does that make sense? Or anybody have any questions? Or Tamar usually argue with me on every point that I say. So, is that idea clear?
No, I like it. Yeah, I didn't really like the idea of like the connection between the three.
That was Debbie's idea. Not mine.
That's why I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay.
No, but I think the idea of the Ramban, what I was thinking about the Bodhisar, Shikhasam, and Gilayarayos is more that they're both, like, all three of them are like an abandonment of a relationship. It's like you abandon your relationship with God, like when you worship idols. And obviously, like, killing is an abandonment of any sort of relationship with human life. And Gilayarayos, similarly, like, it's you completely, like, disregard the relationship you have with, you know, the people in your family or whatever, all those different relationships.
But how does that fit in with the Onesh, the nature of the Onesh? I think Debbie's explanation, like, fits in nicely.
Because I think that the Onesh, because I think that there is a relationship that you have to have with the land when you're in Israel. And that's why I think that too, it's a like forced abandonment of that relationship.
Okay. Okay. All right. But I mean, I just think that to me, it's like more of a, it's not an abandonment by Klal Yisrael. It's the idea is that your expectation is that by planting a lot of seeds, you'll get a lot of produce. Tamar's giving me a stare down. So Tamar's right. Okay. Everybody on the phone line, Tamar's right. all right. So I think that's the Ramban's idea. I think the Ramban's idea is that Lo sachanifu es ha'aretz is that when you're in Eretz Yisrael and you're sinning and it produces this effect in the land, particularly the three major sins of Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Dam, and Gilui Arayos, you're not just flawed in the sin, but you're producing an effect in the land which hinders and prevents the land from functioning to bring man to a greater knowledge of God and appreciation of God. So there's a separate flaw in Eretz Yisrael in doing that. Okay? But now,
the reason why I didn't understand the connection that Debbie made between the three is because any sin that somebody commits, there's some sort of goal, there's some sort of pleasure they derive from it.
No, it's different. There's an expectation. These sins are alluring. You see that because these are the major sins of...
What about stealing? That's alluring.
I mean,
there's like an immediate pleasure.
There's also a certain, I think aside from that, the nature of these sins, these are the major sins. I don't know if you're familiar, but these are all Yaharik Val Yavor. In all these sins, these are the three sins where if a person is, like a gun is put to your head, and a person says, do Avodah Zarah, you're supposed to die for it, or Shvichas Damim, or Gilui Arayos. So there's also a certain seriousness to these sins.
Right, but the question still remains, why are these three Yaharik Val Yavor?
Well, that's a separate question. That's a separate shir. I'll give a shir on that another time. That's a separate question. I mean, why are these sins...
I think that's the question that you're asking now.
No. I'm just asking, how does the punishment fit the sin? That chanafa, the idea that the land's not producing what you expect it to produce, how is that related to the sin? At least the nature of the flaw of the sin. So I'm just saying that it's related because in all these sins, there's an expectation. Like by Gilui Arayos, you have an expectation that it's going to be an amazing experience, but it doesn't satisfy it. Or Shvichas Dam or Avodah Zarah.
I don't think that's true.
Okay, all right.
That there's going to be an amazing experience having intimate relations with an animal.
I think you're wrong. I think that with all these sins, there's a certain fantasy.
There's a fantasy.
Thank you.
No, I think there's a disorder.
All right, fine. We'll agree to disagree, okay? Can we just put this aside? I really think that that's the case. We'll talk about it after. But I really think that that in all these cases, there's a certain fantasy there. That it's going to produce a certain satisfaction, and that it doesn't produce that, and I think that's reflected in the ownership of the land. Okay, all right, we're going to go with that. I'm not discounting what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but you're asking broader questions. You know, why are these sins greater? And also, you're just arguing with the point. So you have a right to argue with the point. Okay. All right. Can we go on?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go on. Just the next part of the Ramban. So one Isser is Lo Sachanifu, and we explained that. But now, what's the difference between Lo Sachanifu and Lo Sitame Es Aretz? So if we look at number 6 in the Ramban, he says, V'inyon HaTumah Shetiya aretz temeya. It becomes impure. Velo yishkon ba kvod Hashem, bios ba dam naki, shlo niskaper bedam shofcha. So the Shechina won't dwell there because there's innocent blood which is not atoned for. And it's only atoned by killing the murderer. Okay, so what's the difference? I just want to explain what the difference between Toma and Sachanifu is. And so what exactly, I'm just going to ask the people in the shir, what exactly do you guys know about Toma? Do you know anything about Toma? What produces Toma? You know, what situations create Toma? What is unique about, what is it about Toma? That, anything, just any information.
Death creates Toma.
Death, okay, good. So death.
No.
What?
Toma.
What is this?
Saras,
good. Saras. What else? Anything else?
Nida,
okay. The reason why Saras creates Toma is because Saras is like dead. It's like dead. The skin is dead. But Nida also, right? Nida creates Toma. What do we know about it? What?
Nothing.
What do you say? What do we know?
No one's dead there, though.
What do?
Oh, it's the loss of potential life.
All right. What do we know about? What do we know also about Toma and the Mikdash? Is a person who's Tame allowed to go into the Mikdash or not?
No.
No. Okay. Good. So we know that two ideas about Toma. One idea is that Toma, at least by like a major category of Toma, is Toma's Mace. That Toma seems to emerge from, let's say, a dead body or even like a dead animal carcass, a nevela, creates Toma, or like Tsaras, dead skin on the Tsaras. Creates Toma, and we also know that a major idea in Toma is that Toma is incompatible with Mikdash. That when a person's Tame, when they're impure, so they can't go into the Mikdash. They're not allowed to be in the presence of God when they're Tame. So those are two ideas about Toma. So I just want to understand, or gain at least a little bit of an insight into what that idea is, what that concept is. Why is it that these are the major categories, or what Toma is, and why it's incompatible with God, and then maybe we can apply it to the land, because the whole idea here is los tameis aretz, don't create toma in the land. So if we want to understand what that means, we have to understand or have a basic concept of toma. So why do you think that, or what's the idea, I'm asking the people in the shir, what's the idea of toma? Like, why is it bad, or why is it bad, or is it good, or?
I think it's just like a separation. I don't know that it's bad.
Okay.
Like a separation, like there needs to be some type of separation.
Separation from what?
I mean, in most of the situations, it's like a separation from people or from a situation.
Okay, like a dead body. Why would what's the idea of a dead body creating Toma? Just a basic point, basic philosophy. Why do you think a dead body is different than a live body? And why should it create Toma? What is a dead body? Let's start with that. What is a dead body? No, everybody. Everybody becomes them. It's only usher for a Kohen, because a Kohen has to work in the Mikdash or be available for the Mikdash. But it creates Toma in everybody. And if you're a Yisrael and you want to go to the Mikdash, you're not allowed to go into certain areas if you're a Tame. But there's no Isser for you. It's not usher for you to become Tame. It's just that it creates this state. And in this state of Toma, you can't be in the presence of God. So my question is, why not? And if you touch it, if you're within Dalet Amos of it, if you're under...
And how long are you Tuma for?
7 days by a dead person. It's not important. Also by different...
I just was curious, okay.
There's different types of Tumas. For a dead person, you have to get sprinkled in the Mikdash, and it's 7 days. For other types of Tuma, it's only one day. It depends on the type of Tuma.
And so that's like why today we wash our hands after visiting a cemetery or a...
Yeah, that's a minog. Okay. It's a minog.
All right.
So what's the idea of Toma? So I'm going to propose a possibility, and then maybe we can explain the Ramban, what he means that the land becomes Tame if it's murderous, if there's murderers in the land. So you see, the idea of Toma a lot of times is attached to death, and especially over here we're talking about murder and people killing other people. So what's the attachment of Toma to death? So the body, when a person's dead or when an animal is dead, it's really the body is removed from the soul, right? It's in a state where it's just the body, and the body exists... alone, apart from the soul. And the body itself is really like an empty vessel. It's like the physical element of a person. And the soul which is the non-physical element of a person. So Tumah is created out of a situation where you just have the physical, where the physical exists apart from the non-physical. So by a body, for example, when a person dies and the body is removed from the soul, so that situation creates Tumah. Like an animal. An animal has a soul. It's not a human soul, but it has an animal soul. And when the animal is dead, the carcass produces Tumah. So Tumah is associated or is created out of situations where you just have the physical alone apart from the non-physical. Okay? So the idea is that when a person's attached to that idea, that concept of the physical alone, they're not in a state where they could be really to be in the presence of God. That's why a person who's Tumah, which means that they're attached to that concept, they can't go into the Mikdash. Why? Because they're not attached to the non-physical, to the spiritual element of the person, but rather they're attached to the body and the physical. It's not that the body's bad, but it's that when you're attached to the body and the physical, you're not in a state where you're appropriate or where you can really gain ideas of God and you can give proper respect to the Shekhinah. So that's why it's inappropriate for a person who's, let's say, attached to a dead body, who somehow became Tumah, who touched a dead body, to enter into the Mikdash. Because they're not in a state where they're attached to the non-physical, but they're in a state where they're attached to the physical, right? So what's the idea of Tumah in the Aretz, in the land itself? So I want to bring it back to the Ramban. See, the land of Eretz Yisrael is really a land of morality. It's a land tied to concepts and mitzvah, Shemitah, Yovel, Maisros, Trumos. All these ideas, they exist in the very land itself, the substance of the land. Now, what does Tumas Aretz mean? It means you're stripping the land of all that, of its conceptual nature. Just like the body removed from the soul becomes Tameh and is Mitameh, so too the land stripped of its ideas and its concepts becomes Tameh. It becomes a land that's just a vessel, and it no longer has its life to it. It's like the life is stripped of it. So the idea the Ramban is saying is that when the land itself, when Eretz Yisrael is attached to murderers and Shvichas Damim, so the land itself, and we saw the Ramban before, he also says this by Gilui Arayos, he doesn't mention that here, and Avodah Zarah, but the land itself becomes like an empty land. It becomes a land that's devoid of its moral character, of its conceptual underpinnings. That's how I would frame it. So I think the Ramban is really, he's really describing two separate Isurim here that are unique to Eretz Yisrael when you sin in Eretz Yisrael. One Isser is that when you sin in Eretz Yisrael and you produce the effect that the land is no longer sustaining and it prevents people from coming to a proper appreciation of the Shekhinah and Yedias Hashem. And also, when the land is associated with murder, specifically in murder because the Psukim here are talking about murder, you strip the land of its concepts and its life. And it makes the land also unable as a vehicle to gaining Yedias Hashem. So there's two ways in which the land itself is hindered in terms of its design to give man the proper appreciation of the glory of God. One way is if the land itself isn't producing what it's meant to produce, and the other way is when the land itself is stripped, it's devoid of its life, of its concepts, and that's similar to Tumah. That's the idea of being metame the land. You're metame the land when you make the land an empty vessel, just like a body that's devoid of its soul, and like an animal that's devoid of its soul, and like Tzaras, where you have dead skin. So all those ideas, I think, apply to the land. That's the idea of Tumas Aretz, that the land is now impure. It's not that it's bad, the land's bad. It's not a bad thing, it's just an idea, it's a concept, that the land is purely like a physical land now. It's associated with murder, so it's no longer, it's associated with injustice, so it no longer is able to affect people due to its concepts and its conceptual nature. Okay? Is that idea clear? Does anybody have any questions or think differently? Somebody. Tamar. Tamar?
No. Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So everybody hear that idea? Yeah. Somebody other than Tamar. Debbie, can you say yes? Or Nicole? Or anybody else on the phone line?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. I was told that my mom, who's faithful and calls into the shir every week, I was told on the streets that she likes to read. And if she wants to read, mom?
Yeah, she wants to read.
All right. Can you read number 10 in the Ramban? There's one more idea that emerges from these psukim, and it's a little bit of a different take. This is the third idea that arises from the Ramban. And number 10, my mother is going to read now.
It's okay. You don't have to say it so many times.
All right.
Ubet sifrei masi.
No, just skip the parentheses. Yeah. Lechanafin. So in the Sifri, which is one of the books of the Tanaim, it explains this pasuk, and it says, what does it mean? It's an ashara, it's a warning to flattery. Chanafin means to flatter. As the Ramban explained, what is flattery? Flattery is where the outside is different, it appears different than the inside, right, than what's going on. So too, it's an idea of an isser to flatter somebody. So go on, what does he mean? Okay. Okay, so first the Torah tells us that you can't take a bribe from murderers. If a murderer wants to get off of the death penalty, you can't accept money from him to get him off. And then it says, also, the Torah is telling you, also don't flatter a murderer. And don't tell them, and don't talk about their tukfam, their power, and their kavod, and their respect, and respect their families, even without a bribe. Meaning, even if the murderer doesn't give you a bribe, it would be inappropriate to praise the murderer and to flatter the murderer. Go on. Okay, so if we flatter the murderer, then the land itself will produce this effect where it won't produce the crops that you wished it to produce and that you planted. Okay, so now this is the third idea in the Ramban. There's a separate isser in the Torah, or a separate mention in the Torah, that apart from not accepting bribes from a murderer to get off the death penalty, you're not supposed to flatter the murderer. You're not supposed to say, wow, that murderer is great. What kind of isser is this? Why does the Torah need to give us this idea and tell us that there's a separate isser to do this? Why would you even think that? Or it seems like, why does the Torah have to emphasize this point? Oh, fine, I understand. I get it. You know, don't take a bribe from the murderer. Why? Because, listen, the proper justice for a murderer is that he be killed. And you can't take a bribe from a murderer to avoid that, to avoid the death penalty. But why is there a separate idea in the Torah of not flattering the murderer? What kind of strange concept is that? Anybody want to take a stab at that and explain the Ramban? What does the Ramban mean?
Well, if you flatter the murderer, you're kind of agreeing with what they did.
But why would you? Would you ever say, don't flatter the...
Maybe the flatterer wants the person dead also.
But there's no... Let's say... Here's a stronger question. The Torah never says, don't flatter the stealer, the person who steals, or don't flatter the person who is doing Gila Arias, you know, or don't flatter the person who eats non-kosher. So what kind of... So why does the Torah have to tell specifically, don't flatter the murderer? That's the question. Right? Okay. What do we know about... Did anybody see Goodfellas? Anybody on the phone line? Ever see Goodfellas? The movie? It's a movie. Goodfellas. I recommend it. It's a great movie.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Ray Liotta. Who is that? Robert De Niro. I tried to convince Tamar to see Goodfellas many times. What?
I've seen Sopranos.
Oh, okay, fine. Sopranos. I never saw Sopranos, but Casino is also another famous movie from the 90s. Okay, so you have all these mob movies. So there's a great attraction to the mob movie. It's very popular in American society.
That's Sopranos, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that possible that somebody, I mean, I'm not in favor of murders, but is that possible?
You're not?
What?
Really? Okay, yeah. What are you
killing people, but...
Wait, not of anybody?
There must be somebody.
Don't attack me, just let me finish.
All right.
You can attack me at the end.
All right.
Somebody who deserves to be murdered. Don't attack me on that. But somebody somebody is bad, or, you know, or somebody, and then you flatter the murderer. That's what they meant?
I don't think it's that. I mean, that's a very specific case of murder. But, like, what do you... But I was trying to, like, lead us in the direction. There's a... Like, I was showing by the mob situation. There's a certain...
There are cool murderers out there.
There are cold-blooded murderers, mobsters. But there's a certain...
But they're kind of cool.
Yeah, there's a certain allure to the mobster. Why? Yeah. Because a mobster, there's a power there. There's, like, a certain power that the mobster has. And you respect, there's a respect, a natural respect for the power. It's not just a fear of the mobster, but you almost root for the mobster. And you want the mobster, even though when you reflect on it, the reality is the mobster is a real evil person. And they kill people and they treat people as if they're, you know, meaningless. But they're still part of a person that roots for the mobster. Why do you root for the mobster? Because within there's a certain power to the mobster. And in killing and murder reflects like a certain power that an individual has to be able to kill another person. There's an allure to that, and you see that person as having a certain power. Kings are able to do that, you know, melachim. So why does the Torah have to tell us not to flatter the murderer? I think the Torah is pointing out, or it's demonstrating, according to the Ramban and the Sifri, it's demonstrating that there's an allure to the murderer. And it's saying that don't fall into the trap of the allure of the murderer. Because there is a tendency to flatter and to look up to people who are murderers because of the fact that murder implies a certain power. Because it demonstrates a certain strength of the individual. So the Torah, it's telling you, even aside from not taking a bribe from the murderer, but you shouldn't be allured and look up to the murderer and flatter the murderer. Because part of the idea of taking a bribe from a murderer is that also, that even though we are disgusted by murderers, there is also in murder a certain allure to the murderer, that he has a certain power, he has a certain strength. There's
also an allure to someone who steals. That's why there's all these movies about these famous bank thieves.
That's true. But I agree with that. That's a good question.
The stealing, that there's a certain level of power when you steal. You have power over the police.
Right. That's a good question. It's a good question. I think it's different by murder, but it's a good question. Good point. I mean, why by stealing? Also, you see that there's movies about stealing. People are drawn to stealing, right? But I don't know. I mean, you're saying that there is a power. I think it's more overt with murder. That's how I would say it. With stealing, it's like the person's not so powerful when they have to, like, steal and go around people's back to steal. It shows, like, a certain weakness that the person's unable to just go up to the person and just take their money. They have to work out schemes and fraud schemes. Like, I don't think you root for a person who takes money in a more brutal way than a person who...
Really?
I didn't know you watch movies, Debbie.
The casino one.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's usually murder involved in those, too. They're usually related. In all those stealing movies, like that recent Ben Affleck one, The Town or whatever, there's usually murder.
All right, I'm just saying there's a difference between stealing. Like, there are a lot of cases of stealing where a person, like, is allured to the
steals, they murder, too, though.
I know, but within stealing, there's an allure to the scheme of stealing and the plan. Wow, they worked it out that they tricked everybody and they stole from them. Like they,
right.
But by murder, it's the power. It's like the person's, it's pure power, pure ego, pure aggression there. And there's an allure to that. I think it's a little bit different than stealing. And I think there's a stronger allure because within stealing, there's also like a certain weakness there that the person has to resort to their intellect and to scheme in order to do it. They can't just, but over here by murder, it's more overt. But but it's still a good question. You guys, everybody can think about it on the phone. But I just wanna approach it.
Also, by murder, it's like something that's irreversible. Like it's very, it's lasting. Like,
right. So you're saying that's why it's more. That's why you're saying there's more of an allure to a murderer. Okay, I agree with that.
Yeah.
So the murderer reflects or possesses more power than other types of. Than other types of chatayim and other types of sins. So that's what I want to say from the Ramban and explain the Ramban and the Sifri, why there's a separate Isser of a chanuf of flattery by the murderer, because the Torah recognizes that there's an allure to the murderer because of the power that the murderer expresses in murdering. So the Torah has to tell you that aside from not taking a bribe from the murderer, you also shouldn't look up to the murderer. You shouldn't be drawn into the murderer, because murdering is a tremendous flaw, and it shouldn't be gravitated towards the murderer. Okay, so that really is tonight's shiur. And I just want to review them. There's three main points of this shiur, and I think the Ramban's bringing out these points in a beautiful way. So there are three points are as such. The Torah seems to specify that there's an isser of lo sachanifu in Parshas Maaseh and lo sitame, and we explained what that idea is. According to the Ramban, the isser of lo sachanifu and lo sitame is that you're not allowed to affect the land's ability to function in line with its design. And the design of the land, according to the Ramban, is that it's a land that's supposed to lead man to greater knowledge of God and greater kavod, a shechina, respect for the shechina, and respect for God. So when you do averus in the land, in Eretz Yisrael, the land is punished as a result, and it doesn't sustain the people, so that also hinders the land's ability to bring people to greater Yedias Hashem and greater Kvod HaShechita. So that's why there's a separate Isser and a separate Asara warning in the Torah to affect the land in that way. Don't do these Isurim in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because you'll affect the land, and the land won't be able to function in line with its design. And so too, the idea of Osetame Asaretz, that the idea of Toma is like, for example, by a dead body, that the body is removed from the soul. When you just have the physical and it's removed from its life source and its spirituality. So that's the idea of Toma. And so too, when the land is a murderous land and there is blood spilt in the land becomes devoid of its concepts and its underlying meaning, and it just becomes an empty vessel and just a regular land. So too, in doing that, you also prevent the Shechina from being recognized. And there's an incompatibility between Toma and Shechina. So too, by the land, the Isser is to make the land Tame, to remove it from its conceptual nature and its ability to be compatible with the Shechina. And the last idea, which is a little bit of a separate point, is that the Ramban brings in an idea of flattering the murderer, that the Torah tells you that there's a separate problem with flattering the murderer. And we explain that by a murderer, there's a certain allure, as we see by mob movies or mob television shows, that there's an allure to the murderer, because a murderer possesses a certain power over other individuals. So the Torah has to specify, don't be drawn into that allure. Don't give into that, because if you do, it'll be harmful to you, and it's a flaw in itself. So the Torah creates a separate issue for that. So that's really tonight's shiur, and hopefully we gained the insight into this area in Parshas Maaseh, the area of Lo Sachanifu and Lo Sitame. Okay, does anybody have any questions on the shiur? Hopefully the shiur was clear tonight. If not, please ask your questions now. All right. So everybody, have a good night and have a great Shabbos.
You too.
All right.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Next week, I'll try to make it to Far Rockaway. All right. Have a good night. Bye.